Eric Mahan joining us in studio for first time since, what do we think, March of last year?
I was literally 7 years old. Now I have two children.
Right, so January of last year.
That's right, yeah. What a treat. The only reason I haven't been here earlier is because of aforementioned children.
Right.
We had that gap, that terrifying gap between the end of school and the beginning of camp and other things, and you're just like, I don't know what to do with these. They claim they're mine, and I
recognize these people. Yeah. Well, you look great. We've done,
Thank
as you.
You
can see, nothing to the studio.
No,
since
it's really impressive. You know what? All I care about is it's cool in here.
Yes.
That's all I was, yep. You know, every place I go right now that's not cool, I'm like, well, I'm not staying here.
No, it's not worth it.
And
by the way, cooler just by you being here.
That's what I do. That's what I do. It's gosh, I can't do this. That's why I moved north, and then, you know, global warming, and now it's like we exist in this perpetual state of muggy. And I had muggy in New Jersey. I didn't need to find muggy. I had attained that. That's okay. It's nice to be here. It's nice to be here with you guys acting like we're sort of normal. I hope those warnings that you were mentioning about from the CDC are, I don't know, but at least we've been doing the right thing here in Maine.
We're good in Maine. Just close the border.
That's right. Too late. Hey, I must assure you.
Not now, just after tourist season.
That's right. I was going to say, the capitalist in me shuns that. But hey, whatever, you know, it's this unprecedented time. God, I was tired of saying that, and I just let it slip again. I'm sorry, folks. I need like a quarter jar every time people say things like that. I realized early this morning, because this is a thing. Maybe this is a dad thing. I've started waking up at like 4:30 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
It's just what I do. And I realized, like, I have an extra day, an extra Tuesday in June, and I didn't really have anything necessarily prepared, but. As we were talking about sort of, you know, Germany, and then we talked about Austria and Hungary, I said, well, let's keep going. Let's keep going, as the Almonds so beautifully quoted, back to where it all begins. Let's talk about the fact that, I've never really talked about Greece, but let's talk about, you know, really where the wine culture began, which is basically as we're heading towards and into the former Soviet bloc. And I think that's a big reason why we just don't know anything about it, because there was no one who had the wherewithal to go in, you know, 40 years ago and lay the groundwork. When did the wall come down? I mean, yeah, you had to really have been focused on, you know, sort of setting yourself up for that, and it just didn't happen. So really only now are we, and people come into my store all the time because, you know, Eric Asimov from the New York Times or whatever writes about Georgian wine, and everybody's like, well, surely you must have tons of this because it's so important. I'm like, no, most of Georgia wine goes to Poland or Latvia. It is important, but it's still within that former Soviet bloc distribution system. But Greece is not. So let's kind of talk about all of this. The earliest known traces of wine, just kind of in general, there's some evidence, for those of you who want to, you know, call and correct me, there's evidence in China of wine and rice co-fermented beverages. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about grapes. So we're talking about Georgia, circa 6,000, Iran, which was not Iran at the time, but Persia, circa 5,000, Sicily, circa 4,000. Wine reached the Balkans about 4,500 BC and was consumed and celebrated in Greece, Thrace. If anybody listening knows where Thrace, the borders of ancient Thrace, well done. and Rome, of course. And we'll talk about how it got there. But I found this interesting. Though it was 6,000 BC, and by the way, what they discovered specifically is that is when people started crushing grapes. This was not like accidental. This is people figured out they wanted grape juice, and so they attained it. and then we'll get into, you know, the furthering of that by the noble process of fermentation. But that's basically that's when people have discovered evidence of pulp, of crushing, of ways of attaining grape juice out of grapes. The earliest known winery, however, is from Armenia, 4100 BC. It's called the Areni 1 Winery, and it is in a cave. So, really, what's old is still old and yet new. It's, you go anywhere in especially the old world where they needed caves, you will go into caves. And they are being used for exactly the same reason that these people in Armenia were using caves, because it is cool. It is temperature stable. And it is dark, so you don't have any UV damage or anything like that. It is the best environment for storage. And, of course, not just of wine. I mean, I'm telling people in an area where we have root cellars and things like this. I mean, the earth is sort of this ultimate temperature stabilizer. And people throughout the millennia have figured that out. Duh. Now, Georgia, why is Georgia important? First of all, it's extraordinarily good for grape growing. They have about 500 different grape varieties that grow in Georgia. 500. Now, Georgia, not a big country, okay? 500 different grape varieties. Lots of microclimates, lots of, you know, interesting places for different grapes to grow. The roots of it go back to the fact that the folks in the Caucasus Mountains discovered that, shockingly, when you leave wild grape juice, specifically in the ground, they left it over the winter in a pit, in ceramics, right, in amphora. And it, because, again, the temperature stabilization, the gradualness of the thing, as opposed to just wild, hot temperatures going crazy and causing all sorts of weird, maybe, infections and weird stuff going on. It was just a very slow, deliberate process. And the amphora that these guys put them in are called kveri. I might be mispronouncing that. It's entirely possible, but we're going to go with that, kveri. So important are these amphora deemed that in 2013, UNESCO added them and the Georgian tradition of winemaking in them to the, and I love this, I didn't know this existed, but I think it was fantastic that I found it out, to the UNESCO Intangible Cultural Heritage Lists.
Well, I like that.
Intangible. I think you could angle for that.
I'm on the bottom of that list.
But you're on the list.
Bubbling under.
You know, but listen, just to be mentioned, to be nominated,
it's an honor.
Is an honor, exactly. But that's what they did. So this is what people were finding, you know, from this 6000 BC. This is what they're finding is evidence of crushing of grapes to attain wild grape juice. And of course, I will remind you that there's yeast on the outside of grape skins. So simply the nature of crushing them and leaving them in contact with those skins, even for a little, is going to start the glorious process of fermentation. Because the yeast is going to eat that sugar. It's going to turn it into alcohol and carbon dioxide. And so when these... speaking of that, because I've been lucky enough to try wines that were made in this tradition, though I grant you they were made in France by a gentleman in the Saint-Joseph region of the Rhone who had learned how to make wine in Georgia. And so he, just for fun... and I do actually sell a wine that he makes in this way, in case anybody's interested. He makes his Saint-Joseph Red the traditional way in a barrel, but he also makes a small portion of it in these amphora that he has buried in his this special little shack that he's built next to his winery. And to call it a winery is very glorified, because he's a very rustic operation, which is kind of cool. But I've had this, and so what you get, because you have that CO2 developing in a buried container, and they use like wax and like honey, you know, beeswax to seal it up and stuff like that. You get like a Beaujolais kind of carbonic maceration thing. So it has a little bit of sort of fresh sprightliness to it. So it's kind of interesting. I'm running out of time, so I'm going to move on quickly to Greece. So the Greeks, basically, if Armenians and Georgians and Persians sort of started the craze, the Greeks said, hold my beer, as it were. Speaking of which, I know we normally drink wine here when I'm here. It's too darn hot today. So we are enjoying a Bitburger Radler, which is like 1.0%. It is mostly lemonade and a little bit of Bitburger pills.
Delightful.
This, folks, will save you on a day like this. Mm. This is the ultimate refresher. It is fantastic. So yeah, that's what we're
doing.
So speaking of holding my beer. It is actually in Greece where the first evidence of the crushed grapes were found. But more importantly, the Greeks introduced Vitis vinifera to basically the entire Mediterranean. Okay? Is that important? I don't know. You tell me. These are the grapes we like to, you know, crush and ferment and drink. So Italy, Sicily, France, Spain. Reason they have grapes that you like to drink? The Greeks. Also the Phoenicians, but we'll talk about that some other time. But yeah, it's Greece is tremendously diverse. I mean, obviously, you've got mainland here. You've got former Macedonia here. You've got islands all over the place. Appellations to know, kind, you know, just off the top of your head, the island of Santorini, which grows the grape Assyrtiko, wonderful, fresh, lively white. Nemea in the Peloponnese, Nausa in Macedonia. The grapes to get to know, Ioritiko, which is also known as St. George, Mavro Daphne, which makes a wonderful dessert wine, Xenomavro, which is known as sour black. That's something that's almost like a Pinot Noir. Get to know those. Assyrtiko, which is the grape in Santorini. There's just a huge variety of grapes, both in Greece. And of course, once we finally start getting these imports from Eastern Europe, that'll be even more exciting. Harder to pronounce, but more exciting. I have no more time, basically, so I just want to remind everybody, go get your shots, folks. Take care of everybody, and I will join you all here in studio, probably with some wine next time, next Tuesday. I look forward to it.
Well, it's so great to see you again.
Nice to see you guys.
Are you on tonight at 6?
Yes, 6 o'clock, our final episode of Season 3, Out and About. We have Deb Newman on Destination Downtown, then we're taking July off.
As well you should.
Yes.
Thank Cheers. You, sir. Stay cool.
Will do.
Eric Mann, Bangor Wine and Cheese Company, 86 Hammond Street, downtown Bangor, with Message in the Bottle.